I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Mike Boris, and this is Straight Talk.
2004, Willie Mason.
Yeah.
And who'd you play in that game?
The Roosters, yeah.
Fuck you. Always been dying to know this. Were you always as big as you are now?
No, but I was always rangy and long, you know what I mean? Like, I reckon 16, I was about 6'1". And like, just say 95 kilos. Then I grew to like 6'5" and 115 kilos,
no.
Without touching a weight or doing anything. The defining moment where I put things in perspective is probably like when I buried my father at 17. That was it.
Wow. You buried your father at 17?
Yeah. So shit like that is very defining for your mental, right? And I always put things in perspective. I just never could get down that much or never be high that much. This is a roller coaster of a ride, right? The highs are here, the fucking lows are here. Get back to the middle as quick as you can.
What does it give you doing podcasts? I mean, what do you get out of it? It
gives you a platform to speak on anything you want without it being taken out of context. Like, you can say something to me. Oh, you said this. Watch the whole podcast, mate.
Willie Mason, welcome to Straight Talk, mate.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Fucking long time.
Yeah, it is. Dude. 20 years.
Is it that long?
20 years. Remember you, the wizard?
Yeah,
got,
yeah.
Got us the rings for Origin 03 and 04, and we went up to Byron. But I always tell everyone about that. I said, when I first got into the Origin team, it was just that culture of winning. That's what they go into now.
Bellyache was a coach.
Yeah, Belly, Sticky, Ricky, that whole sort of era, Gus. Yeah, that was good times, man.
Yeah, Gaz was in the side, actually.
Yeah.
Actually, I remember you walking around my house.
Yeah, in Byron Bay.
Yeah. And I put a barbecue on and for the team, and I was sponsoring the side of time. But I remember you walking through my house, and you came out and said, fuck, how do you get all this shit? Like, what have I got to do to get this in? And Gaz was, like, really fucking impressed. That might have been the last year he ever played for rugby league, I think. Didn't he move
Gaz,
on to rugby
league? No, that was in 04. 04, he played 5-6, and then he took off...
To the pink side, to the rugby union. Well, because I remember, I hope I hadn't sort of poisoned his view on the world, because he went off to get more dough. He went overseas.
He did own.
And by the way, I think it was Clive Churchill Medal 2004, Willie Mason.
Yeah.
And who'd you play in that game?
The Roosters, yeah.
Fuck you.
That's the first time I actually felt bad of winning something, because all those guys are my mates for years. Like Minicello, I've known Mini since I was 12. Finchy, Toops, a lot of those guys, Croc, we all come through the same system.
Yeah.
In Newcastle and then playing against each other, like when you're 17 years old. We're like 24 then, right? We're just still young men. But like even, it was great. It was a great feeling winning that grand final, right? But it's just like when you watch the replays, you don't realize how distraught the other team is. And it was one of those games where it went down to the last play. So I could be sitting here going, loser, winner, not a Clive Churchill winner, not anything like that, a loser of a grand final, when it comes down to one play.
Hodjo was in that side.
Hodjo? He was great players.
He was on the bench. He ran on, Sonny was in your side.
Sonny, too.
And I remember we were getting, Sonny was telling us something fairly hard.
Yeah,
and I remember thinking, Sticky was our coach, I'm pretty sure. Was it Sticky?
Yeah.
I remember Nick Politis and I were sitting up about four seats back from where the players were. And I remember saying to Nick, fuck, Sticky, get Justin Hodges out there and get him to run at Sunday. Like, I just want Hodges to go on there, stop the momentum you guys had. Because I could feel it. Yeah. I could feel the momentum was going against us. What's it like to win it? What's the most important thing for a rugby league player? Origin? Winning for the Bulldogs a grand final or playing for the country?
It's three things that are really right up there, right? When you're a young kid, you look at like I was watching like the Canberra sides and the Bulldog sides in the 90s because I was a teenager in the 90s. So that's what you want, right, as a team member, right? You just want to, you win, you go to battle, you're training every single day with these guys, blood, sweat and tears, all that kind of stuff. So when you get that grand final win, it's ridiculous, right? Like, because it's a proper team effort. It's more individual when you get to these higher accolades, right? With the Australian team, it's like, okay, well, you look at yourself as one of the best players in the world if you've got that green and gold. Yeah, it's like it's more individual. And then you just only have to do your job when you're playing for Australia. You know what I mean? Like, that's why you see these players who play so good for Australia, because you just got to do your job. Really, you just do what you do.
That's sort of a bit like, I've heard people say that about Origin.
And Origin too, you're playing with the best players. Yeah. You're here for a reason. We're not sitting here going to overcoach you. You deliver, you do what you're doing in club, just it's hard to put it on in Origin because you're playing against the best. Even in test football as well, you're playing against the best players. So when you play in club football, you're training every single day with these guys. And just say if you come through the system like we did at the Bulldogs, you got 12, 13 blokes there that have been aiming for the same goal for 4 or 5 years. Then you finally achieve it. That's why you see such like emotions and everything like that when it's final, that whistle's gone. It's like, what? We did it, you know? It's like, we actually did it. So that's why you always see those players. We did it. Like, you can't believe it happened, because that's your ultimate goal as a club and as a team. So we want to win the grand final. You want to get to prelims. You want to do all that sort of stuff. And if you remember back then, like, in 02, we got the salary cap.
Yep.
03, we got pumped by you blokes in the prelim. 04, Coffs Harbour scandal, all that shit. So all that stuff was, like, around. And if you come through that system, like me and Corey Hughes and all these guys, about 10 of us, like it meant a lot more, right? So than your average game.
Do you mind explaining, Willie, like, because not many people ever get the experiences. I was lucky to see it, but and you don't know it until you sort of feel it, sort of thing. Often when a club wins a game, it wins a grand final, the cameras are in there showing them sing the team song. If you win Origin, the cameras are there, but they never go to the losing side. Explain what it's like to sit in the sheds after losing an Origin series or an Origin game or losing the grand final.
So I'm one and done in the grand final, so I've been lucky with that. I've lost some big games like playing for Australia and like finals and in Origin. That's the most disappointing, right? Like it's I can't really explain it. It's like the whatever the other end is from when you're winning, it's that. And some people take it really, really deep. I really don't try and get down that much like when I was playing. Because I knew it was like, if you got lost in Origin game on a Wednesday, you're playing on Friday.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to be the best player for the Bulldogs or the Roosters or whatever team I was with. So that was my mentality. It's like, okay, this is a roller coaster of a ride, right? The highs are here, the fucking lows are here. Get back to the middle as quick as you can.
But where does that come from, Willie?
I don't know. I just had that mindset all the time, right? I was just like, I can't really stay up here too long and here. I think it was when I was early on in my career, like folks, he goes, don't be fucking doing this too much. Don't be here too much. Just stay in the middle. Get back as quick as you can. So I always had that mindset. Like, yeah, it sucked losing Origin, but it was more, I've got to play again in 2 or 3 days. So get your shit together.
But does that sometimes suggest that, well, some people can be like that, but not everybody is.
No.
And does that suggest sometimes that you are looking at this as, and I'm not underplaying it, but this is the game. This is the game I'm in. We're going to win some, we're going to lose some.
Yeah.
Therefore making Willie Mason being a really practical dude. And then somebody else who might be extraordinarily badly affected by it, who then has a shit game the following Friday and that's someone who is over emphasizing the importance of winning versus losing.
Yes.
And they are not practical and they just lose their shit.
Yeah. It's just a game. Like, I was like, it was just a game. We had ample opportunity for 80 minutes to win the game. We lost it. It's disappointing as it is. Like, I'm shattered after games, but it's not the end of the world. I always put things in perspective. I think that's what it is.
Well, where's it? Okay, if I can just wheel back now to you as a kid. I've always been dying to know this. Were you always as big as you are now?
No. I was like not skinny, but I was always rangy and long. You know what I mean? Like, I was just really long.
So
but I was 6 foot, like, it's usually like proper, like just normal. I used to play in the backs, right? I used to play fullback. I used to play wing and centre till I was 16.
Which school?
Toronto High. Up in Newcastle.
So Newcastle boy?
Yeah, Newcastle boy. And then like I was sort of rangy, and then I was from age 16 to 17, I reckon 16 I was about 6'1", and like just say 95 kilo, 100 kilo maybe. Then I grew to like 6'5" and 115 kilo without touching a weight or doing anything. That was just genetics, right? Same as my brother happened to my brother. He was about the same height and then about the same age. He's 6 foot seven, 130 kilo. Yeah, but like stacked, you know? Yeah. It was just genetically and I started doing weights. I was in the system already, played with the Hunter Mariners and all that kind of stuff. And I think the defining moment where I put things in perspective is probably like when I buried my father at 17. That was it.
Wow. You buried your father at 17?
Yeah. So shit like that is very defining for your mental, right? And I always put things in perspective. I just never could get down that much or never be high that much. I'm like, life is very precious. And like I've buried my dad at 17, so I don't think there's much more that life's going to really throw at me that's going to really rattle me.
Were mum and dad big?
Dad was an Aussie. He was Australian, but he wasn't that big. He was about 6'2", 120 kilos. Big for an Aussie man. Yeah. Mum's family. Mum's Tongan and Samoan. Like yeah. I got cousins that are 6'6", 6'7", just all built. It's just the genetics, man.
And in terms of athleticism, I mean, were you a runner?
Yeah, I used to run all the time.
Yeah, like
state runner, yeah.
Like as in Toronto 100 meters, 200?
Yeah, 100, 200.
Serious?
High jump, all that sort of stuff.
And how's it end up in the forwards then?
Well, I was in the backs, right? And I was like, I was playing centers, and then I just sort of grew. Like I was getting like, then the back row was in the 90s, like the Gordon Tallises and that. They were my favorite players. Steve Kearney's, I'm like, they're all back rows, they're not centers. I'm not built like that. I'm not, you know, like Steve Renoff and all those quarter guys that were like, they were my favorite players. But I'm like, I'm getting more rangier and I've still got my pace. I'm like, where's the pathway to get to the top, right? I'm thinking back row, I'm 6'5", 115 kilos, still can run, then sit on an edge, play anywhere, play lock, still had the skill set. So it was just, and I played a heap of basketball and a heap of other sports and it just sort of was the perfect sort of storm. Athleticism was good plus footy IQ.
So if it's a footy IQ, I'm going to come back to that in a second. So you train, who was the first club to bring you down? Was it Canterbury? The Bulldogs?
Canterbury, yeah.
So who was it? Do you remember who it was who scouted you?
Yeah, Michael Hagan, Keith Onslow. Remember Super League, right? So Super League, I was with the Mariners when I was younger, when I was 16, yeah. 17. Newcastle didn't want anybody who played with the Mariners to go back to Newcastle, which sucked because I'm a 16-year-old kid. I haven't played first grade or anything like that. Father just died. Don't really want to leave. I would have played for Newcastle for my whole career just to stay near my family. And so I had to go down to Sydney at like a 17, 18-year-old. Michael Hagan had to pick me up nearly every day because I wasn't going to play. So imagine a 17-year-old kid from the Housing Commission in Toronto West just lost his father, is chased after by every single club, and I was just like, I don't even want to play.
So Michael Hagan.
So Hagan was the coach for the Mariners,
but he also played for the Berries.
Yes. His brother, Bobby Hagan, was the CEO. Bobby Hagan was the CEO. Hagan was like sort of in limbo. What was he going to do? And then he went down to Canberra, right? So he was either trying to get me to Canberra or the Bulldogs because he knew I didn't want to go too far away from Newcastle, from Toronto, because my mum's still there. The youngest was 1 year old. I'm one of eight, you know. So he knew
one
that
of
was
eight.
Yeah, one of eight, or five sisters and two brothers.
My God.
So the cards that I got dealt then were like, all right, well, he ain't going to go to Canberra. He's not going to North Queensland, all this sort of stuff. You know, guys like Tim Sheen's ringing me when I was like 16. It's Townsville, mate. I'm not going there.
So when you turned with the Bulldogs, was Folks the coach then?
He was the coach, yeah.
Yeah, so supremely fit.
Yeah.
Disciplined.
Disciplinarian.
No smoking, no drinking. Yeah. Unfortunately, he died quite young.
Yeah.
He must have had a genetic defect in his heart or something, because it's a heart attack, as I understand it. Yeah. I remember him because Folks is my age, and a lot of my mates who I went to school with out there ended up playing footy with him, the Hughes boys, Graham.
Yeah, I'm talking about Graham, great people.
And a lot of my other mates. But they used to always rave about this guy, Folksy, who was like a complete disciplinarian for himself, with himself.
Yeah.
What was it like for you to turn up in that environment?
It was weird. Right. And it was like different because like just say within Newcastle, like I wasn't full time or anything. I was just a young kid playing under 17s for the Mariners. Right. Then you come down there as a big recruit. And if it was now in today's time, it would have been big news. But because it's late 90s, no one really cared that much. He's still a young kid, still have a good time in Flegg. But like he was the head coach and he recruited me. And like it was weird because I'm from the totally other side from what he is. Right. He's like worked, like trained harder than anyone. Like, not saying I trained.
But he wasn't a natural athlete.
No, that's the thing, right? So footballer-wise, totally different. I'm this young kid from Toronto West, half Polynesian, athletic, all that sort of stuff. He's same position as me, right? Back row.
Yeah, small low.
Totally different body types.
85 kilos.
Totally different characters. So we butted heads a lot. But we just like me being a young kid and what he wanted, like I was still working my ass off for him. Because I just wanted to get his approval. Like he was like a father figure to all of us.
Well, just tell me back, what period are we talking about? In the
90s? 98.
Yeah, 98. So
99.
Just the end of Super League.
Yeah, just the after.
War. Yeah, so Peter Moore, had he passed away?
Peter Moore in 98. Yeah, he passed away. Passed away. Funeral.
So did you? So just give us a bit of an insight as to the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs culture that period. And folks, of course, was married to one of Bullfrog's kids.
Yeah, Bullfrog's daughter.
Yep, and the Anderson boys were running around. Yeah. They were also married to some of the Bullfrog's daughter.
It was very connected, right?
And the Hughes family, Bullfrog was Graham Hughes' uncle.
Yes.
Graham, Gary, Mark, because they married Graham's dad.
So all that what you're saying there, I didn't know.
You didn't know.
I didn't know. I was not a St. George. I was not a Canterbury supporter. My dad hated him, and I reckon if he was alive, I'd never would have played for Canterbury. I would play for St. George. He would have forced me to play for St. George, and so I was always grown up, and I didn't like the Bulldogs because I didn't know them, and he's just like, oh, they're full of Catholics and this and that. I was I'm Catholic. We were brought up Catholic. I don't know where he got all that stuff from. Family club, this and that. I remember him this is in my teens. I'm like, well, I don't really want to go to this club then, right? So I was real hesitant on going to the club. But it was the closest thing to Newcastle.
So when you got down to Canterbury, I mean...
Culture shock, mate.
It was a pretty impressive joint in those days, especially. That whole family environment, whether it was Catholic or not, but the whole family environment, it was well run by, whether we like him or not, he was a good chairman, relatively speaking. He was a tough chairman, ran the joint for success.
Yeah. It was great. It was great being there as a young kid. Oh, they were great. It was a family club. It was. They took care of mum. They took care of all the younger kids. I love the club. I still do. But I really remember that. They brought mum down. They'll put her in a hotel. They look after all the kids. They pay for all the tickets, all that kind of stuff. It was unbelievable. Always about the family. I remember doing deals with Punchy Nelson. Remember Punchy?
Yeah.
Just at the bar.
Barry.
Oh, yeah, Barry. Yes, yeah, Barry Nelson. Doing, hey, you like it here, young fellas? Yeah, I love it. Has another 2 years. I'm like, yeah, sweet. Yeah, shake my hand. It was that sort of old school, still involved with the club. You know what I mean? I love that. And that's what I'm still like. I just still love the club. I wanted to go back to that. But it's never going to go back to those days. But it's like, it's very professional now and everything later.
Well, the chairman just got removed.
Yeah, so it's always been like that.
It's sort of a political joint.
It's very political.
Since when you lose your strong leader who builds his strong culture... As soon as that strong leader leaves, and this has been Canterbury unfortunately ever since, it's just been one aspirational person after another trying to take control of the joint. And all fighting amongst themselves. And I reckon, so I want to ask you this, Willie, how important was it for you in 2004 that Canterbury's administration, that in other words, people are sort of in the club, running the club, the board and all that sort of stuff, how important is it for a club, players, to perform well relative to how stable it is at the top of the joint?
I always talk to younger players now. It's like, it's so important that it all starts from the top, from the chairman, all the board members, to the CEO, to the GM, to the football manager, to the coaches, all that kind of stuff. It's all got to be in sync. Everyone needs to be on the same page. I think that's where they're heading now. In 2004, we were like that. From when I was there at the club, from 98, 99, 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it started falling off the back end because they kept switching and changing CEOs, people getting sacked, this and that, board members, this, that. And that's probably one of the reasons why I did leave. But it was so important. I know how a good club is supposed to be run because I was there and I was part of it, so that's the only things I can compare to. The Roosters run brilliantly. Newcastle run brilliantly. All these clubs that are top notch clubs, they're like that.
Melbourne
Storm, all the top teams are like that. Penrith now, they've got their shit together. That's the pinnacle now. But the Roosters have always been like that. Always. It's always run. I've had 2 years at the Roosters and it's two of the most enjoyable years of my life. And I still got connections there. I still know you. I still know Nick and all these guys that are on the board. That's what the club's got a lot of power.
Yeah, but as a young bloke, when you were Canterbury and when you win the grand final, as a young bloke in 2004, did you sort of recognise the importance of a stable administration at the time, or is that something more upon reflection?
I did at that time because it changed around about there because Bobby Hagan left and they brought Malcolm Node in and Steve Morton was in and out. You know what I mean? I get it. We won when he was CEO. That's not a reflection on him. That's a reflection on the playing group.
He was an ex-News Limited guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He took our points off us.
Later on.
Well, but that's the thing, right? We tried to, I think the club were trying to please everybody once we got done from the cap, right, in 2002. It's like, no, nah, we'll show everyone. Like, we'll get a guy from News Limited who's our CEO, just trying to please everybody instead of being like bulldogs. But we are like.
Well, but he wasn't a bulldog though.
That's, never a bulldog. That's what I'm saying. Like I'm used to like the Bobby Hagans and the Steve Mortimer's being CEO.
Yeah.
Like proper bulldogs people.
Because they played there.
Yeah,
they understood what
they love the joint.
And a lot of them would have come through the system there. Like,
and I get it, like why they're like that, right? Because I come through the system there and I'm sort of like that now. I'm like, dude, like I have an affinity for the club because I know how it's supposed to be run. And it's in that sort of way now, right? I don't even know they've changed the chairman. They've got stability there with, I think, Aaron Warburton does a really good job. He's got some really good board members there. The coaching staff, Gus, everybody around it. The only thing that's not clicking is the wins.
Yeah, not yet.
On the field. Oh, not yet, you know, but it takes a little bit, right? It does take a little bit. Everyone's very impatient now. It's an instant gratification sort of society that we have right now where, you know, it's going to take a little bit.
I can't remember now whether you were in the in the side of the Gus coach in Origin.
Yeah, I was.
You were in that game? Okay, yeah. That's right. So, okay, let's talk about the Gus factor.
Yeah, he's okay. Good. I love Gus.
I love Gus, but there's been the media now, there's been a small fallout between him and Nick. Gus and Nick were like that for a million years. And I don't like it. I don't like the fact that there's been a fallout. But I'm sure it's mendable because they're both reasonable blokes. Gus, of course, was at Penrith for a long time. Look at Penrith now.
Yeah.
And then Gus is at the Bulldogs, which is sort of where he started a million years ago. Mm. Well, he started Penrith, but...
He was there in 1980.
But he went back to the Bulldogs. And what does Gus bring?
He's got an aura and he's got... Like, I've had a relationship with Gus since I was 17. When I was that young kid, when I was playing at the ball, he was been trying to recruit me all the time. Trying to get me the Roosters in 98, after 98, trying to get me the Roosters my whole time when I was at the Bulldogs. He coached me when I was at the Origin. You know, like, so we've had a really good relationship all the time. So my relationship with Gus hasn't really changed. It's just I'm on the administration side, the coaching staff and everything like that, right? He just brings, like, he's got so much experience, whether it be on boards, whether it be, like, the NRL, Channel 9, like, just with football, like, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s. He's been there ever since, right? So he understands the evolution of the game, just the experience that he has, right? He scares the shit out of everyone.
Yeah, what? Because he's got a demeanor.
Yeah, he does have a demeanor, right? So if you don't know him like I know him, right, for 20-plus years, you will shit yourself. Because I'm thinking, I'll put my shoes on a younger kid, right, who's a 17-year-old kid trying to make it in the club. Like, he was in the video session the other day. No one said a word. And I was, this is the SG Ball Pathways kid, and Gus was up the corner like that. When I walked in, I was like, oh, no wonder they're not talking. You know, like, I didn't know that Gus was up the back, but he has that aura. And, you know, people want to please him. They want to appease him all the time because you want to get his, you know, tick of approval. Yeah, he's a good kid. He's a good operator. Because he has that demeanor.
Do you think it's because also he's perceived as being extraordinarily powerful?
And it's power. It is power. That is the word, powerful. He has an aura and he's got power.
Now, okay, let's have a look at his power. I mean, because it's really interesting coming from someone like who's an intelligent bloke like you, who's a good observer, particularly even at a younger age. I didn't realise that you were observing these things when you were a young fella. But someone like Phil Gould being so powerful, what are the sorts of traits that a powerful person like him sort of expresses? Like, is it because he doesn't say much?
Yes, well, I was about to say that because I talk to him a lot, right? And I like talking football and we talk football. He would just listen. Sit there and listen and listen and listen and then give his bit at the end. You know what I mean? Like, it's a technique that not many people can master,
technique.
Right? Yeah, he's got technique. Everything's like everything is very...
theatrical.
You know, he sits here, he listens, he's very like... He's either like this, very in it, or he's
completely distracted.
Completely off you.
Yeah, in other words...
So he could put you off. Just say if you're in there and you're trying to be real serious with Gus, he could be on his phone. That's no disrespect to you. It depends how you perceive it, right? You might think that's rude as hell. You're in a meeting here trying to like, you know, and I've been in meetings like that. And Gus is just like that. He'll get distracted and he'll show you something on the phone, but it could be the best young kid in the state. Could be the best young kid in Fiji or Hawaii or whatever it is. But he's just in that moment, right? But if you didn't know him and then we have a big meeting here and then he gets on his phone, what do you think?
Fuck off.
Yeah. But what are you going to do when it's Gus?
Yeah, you're not going
to. You allow it.
Yeah.
You allow it. And I think he knows he's got that power. You're not going to walk out of that meeting because you need him.
Do you think he's earned that power?
I think he's earned it. Yeah. I don't, you know, he wouldn't be doing this 20, 30 years ago. But now, yeah, the Gus, so if Phil Gould can do that.
I was going to say, Phil Gould can do that. Craig Bellamy can do that.
Mm.
Bennett can do that.
Yeah, there's only three.
Yeah, those three.
Ricky right? Stewart, maybe. Yeah. Ricky's, yeah.
Sticky's a different personality, though.
Sticky would never do that.
And he wears, but also, Sticky wears his feelings on his sleeve, yeah. and like it's right there.
He's very engaging.
Whereas the others don't give you too much.
But then he's engaging Stick, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But their belly and that, they're from cut from that cloth. They'll sit there and just observe. They'll listen, and they'll just like, and then they'll give their spiel. Like Wayne's the best, like that.
My,
he's the king.
Did you think it? But do you think it's a performance for these people? Like, I don't know. Maybe they become so used to it being successful, it has become them, or they become that process or that style. Or do you think it's because they know that if I sit here and don't say much to Willie, just listen and make a pause before I say what else I'm going to say, that I can get his attention? What do you reckon it is?
Well, I think with me, right, just say with Wayne, I've had a great relationships since I was about 23, 24 with him with the Australian sides, and he just understands me, right? And I think he has that aura with everybody. Like he knows, like if I'm talking to him, even when he was coach of South, right, he would he lived in Shifley, South Coogee. I'd just go over to his house and just say I would rattle off some ideas about coaching and this before I got into coaching, right? So I'd always ask him about what I'm thinking before I even do anything. Well, there's only a couple of people that I call if I need advice about football or life. It's probably Gus and it's Wayne. I've got those two about life, like when it comes to footy and that.
Bellamy?
No, I have a good relationship with Bellamy, but not like that.
And do you think Ivan's going to end up in that territory? Because Ivan's sort of starting to work, and Robbo a little bit too, because Robbo doesn't have that much to say. He's quite economic with his terminology. Mm. It looks like to me they're all following one path. And I don't know whether it's natural.
Yeah.
Robbo's quite fairly quiet guy anyway. But and so is Ivan, as you know. Ivan's not a very talkative guy. It's hard to get him to say too much. But so maybe it's these leaders in our game, the ones who are most powerful, once they've achieved some really good, big, outstanding things, they've done some great things, like you know, all of those people that we just mentioned. Unless you're the sort of dude who is quiet and reserved and thoughtful and very produced, maybe you don't bring that aura.
No, I think they're good listeners, right? Because they know personalities. They all know my personality. And I'm very open book about a lot of things and I'm straight to the point, all that kind of stuff. So they listen, right? Then they'll bounce back some ideas. So they know what I'm like. So if I was an introvert, I wasn't very confident in what I was saying or anything like that, maybe they would express a lot more. But because they know what I'm like and what I am as a person, I've never really changed like that. They just let me talk, right? And that's the sort of perception I have with them. They're good listeners and they give me good advice.
Yeah, like great advice, life advice. Part. They give you good advice.
Yeah, like when I ask for like their rebuttal is like, I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, good, thank you.
And also they're open to talking to you.
Yeah.
Why do you think they're happy to talk to Willie Mason? Because, you know, there's every year there's, I don't know, 500 players go through and every year there's another 500, like there's new players all the time. Why does Willie Mason resonate with people at that level?
I think maybe because I'm authentic, right? I haven't really changed. It's been, like we have the same conversation we could have 20 years ago.
Yeah, but I don't want to say this sound weird, but you're sort of an attractive. I don't mean physically, physically very attractive. Yeah. Really. Don't get me wrong, but you're an attractive person. How aware are you of that? As attractive in terms of not physicality, I'm talking about. I mean, you're a big dude, but I mean. Attractive personality, character. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I am. I think the older you get, the more you know yourself and where you stand.
Too.
Yeah, but you know where you are. I'm 43 years old, 44 years old, nearly 44. I sort of know where I stand in the game and my presence in the game. And to know that is powerful.
If you were as big as Steve Folksy.
You wouldn't have,
Do you reckon you'd have the same presence?
No.
But he had presence.
Yeah. I think you could have it in a different way, right? You know, with Folksy had presence, you're right. Yeah. Like when I was talking about that, you're sort of scared of him.
In a little bit
of a way. I was just like, what is he going to do? Like, is he angry at me or something like that? Like, because you don't know what I never knew what I was going to get. Like,
he's
with
like a commando.
Yeah. It's like, is Folksy angry?
Yeah.
Did I do something wrong? Like, you don't really know. Like, he's like your sort of father. Like, and he was was he like 20 years older than me, I think? 20, 25 years older?
No, he's my age, 67, 68.
Yeah, okay.
What are you for? Yeah, 20 odd years.
So like he was a young coach. Like he was only 40.
Yeah, totally.
40 when he was coaching. So he had to coach all these young egos and personalities and that. Because that whole 90s group, gone. The whole 2000 group, I come up first. And then you had guys like JT and Braith and Sonny and Randy, Willie Tonga and all these different personalities. It wasn't the 90s person. More Polynesians coming through. So he had to evolve, right? As a person, like, I can't coach Willie Mason like I coach Jamie Feeney. Or I can't coach Sonny Bill like I coach Dennis Scott, Marco Mealy, and this and that. Like, you got different cats, different athleticism, different mindsets, different like footy IQ. Like, it was, and he did a good job. I was with Rennie, come over for dinner last night. We just laugh about it. I said, how did folks lose his shit? Like, proper. Like, because of some of the stuff we put, it was all boyish stuff. We're in our 20s, you know what I mean? But it was like the fucking headlines. It was just, would have, like, a lot of coaches would have sacked a lot of players.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So you've got your podcast now, right? So it seems to be a natural progression for you to go and do a podcast.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about the podcast in a second. But it seems like someone with your personality, your lack of fear of the camera, which, by the way, you know, if you're scared in front of a camera or if you're a little bit... quiet, it's hard to do a podcast properly.
Yeah.
You got to be full awful. On.
Yeah.
You got to be, and in terms of who you modeled yourself on, which is a great podcast. Do you listen to Joe Rogan? Who do you listen to? What do you do?
I don't mind the few athletes ones, like the one with KG, a lot of basketball players, and Paul Pierce. It's called The Truth or something like that, or KG Certified. There's a lot of basketball ones I like, a lot of NFL ones. They just seem to have the knack for it, right? They just can talk, and they're a bit older too, right? They're in their 40s. They were really good in the same sort of era I was good in. So they can sit there, and they've got all these stories, and they've got all this knowledge in that, and they try and pass it on. You know, that's what it is with podcasts, in your life experience. It's experience, right? You can't buy experience. Like, just say with, like, younger kids at the Bulldogs now. They're 17. I was 17. I think young kids only see the end result. They just see you as you are now, successful, and, you know, like, played at the club. They're like, dude, I was your age when I first come down. I know what you're going through, right? So, like, I get it.
So when is your podcast so about Willie telling stories?
A little bit.
Pay forward of what he learned, his experience? Or is it all about your guest?
Well, we hardly have any guests on. We just sit there and we have a chat like this, like me and Justin Horrow. And whatever it is we're talking about, I can just elaborate on whatever it is. There's a lot of YouTube questions. There's a lot of, like, whatever we get to, I'm like, oh, and then it could be like a little gem in my head. Then we'll just say it off the cuff, right? We analyze games and all that kind of stuff. That's the easy part for me. But when we're talking like this and talking about footy and whatever subjects, it's not like written down. Nothing's written down.
So there's no script?
No script. He's got a computer, but just like, it's like Miller notes, whatever it is. Yeah. It just keeps everything organized.
Yeah, a couple of topics. A
couple of little topics, because he's got to run the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just sitting there, just like
free balling.
Whatever it is, you know, like, I don't want to look at my phone. It's distracting. You know what I mean? I'm not going to have a Miller note because I'll be sitting there staring at it the whole time. I need to be engaged like this. Otherwise, you just drift off.
What does it give you doing podcasts? I mean, what do you get out of it? I mean, apart from the fact that you're building an audience, you're probably going to get, it's probably some commercials associated with the audience over time. I don't know if you're doing that now. We'll come back to that. But what do you get from doing it every? What are you doing? Once a week?
Twice a week. So Monday morning, Thursday morning. So, right. I think it's like, it gives you a platform to speak on anything you want without it being put into context, taken out of context. Like, you can say something to me, oh, you said this. Watch the whole podcast, mate. You know what I mean? Like, don't take it out of context because of the little micros that we send out. So I try not to do that many other podcasts. So I'm doing yours because you're a great man, right? And you do great things.
Thank you.
And I'm like, with other footy stuff, like, I'm like, I don't do the other ones, right? Because it's all the same sort of questions, footy podcasts. They just want to deep dive into how is this. I want to talk about life and everything, like, a bit bit more deeper than just the average sort of footballer. You know, like that was a great time in my life, I get, you know, like, but there's so many life lessons I can grab from footy and just put it into life now.
But is that because you want to pay forward or take it back to the people who are listening to your podcast? All of which would be rugby league fans. Yeah, a lot of which would be rugby league fans, particularly young kids.
Yep.
Do you like sort of helping them out?
I give advice. I say, look, kid, if you're a young kid, if you're a middle young kid, I'll give some advice on what you need to work for the evolution of your game. So a first grade coach picks you. Because if you're just that big kid, right, and you don't learn the fundamentals and skill set that you need for first grade, you'll get stumped at 19, right? So, like, why not, when I'm doing stuff with the Bulldogs, these young kids, 17 to 20, that's the perfect age. You're going to get these kids at 6'4", 120 kilos, run like the wind, can't pass the ball. You know what I mean? Like, dude, you need to learn how to pass the ball, because if you get put in first grade and you can't run a block play or have the timing off little things like that, no one will pick you. Because you can't run in, because you're a big guy, and then you've got to run into Tino. Then you've got to run into Payne Haas. And you're going to Jared Weir Hargraves, who'll take your face off if you're running one-on-one. You need a little bit of, you know, you need some footwork, you need to know how to pass. Like, and that's like, yeah, that's the next level
and
of these games.
You need them to know you're going to pass.
Yeah.
Because if they know you don't pass, if they know you haven't got a pass
in
you.
It's 1 hour, and then guys like, I used to do it. You know, you just pick on these guys, they're young kids, that you're just like, one-dimensional, just tee off on him.
Well, that's really important, Willie, because for these kids, really, one of the things that is coming out of this conversation is that your power of observation when you're playing footy, and as you've matured into the footy, you're observing things or traits about other people who's your opponent, or even also your teammates. But you're observing traits, just like you observed Steve Folks, and just like you observed Wayne Bennett and everybody else. What we need to have is young players or young footballers to be able to learn the skill of observation as to how to play the game and how to skill up relative to what it is that I've got to do in relation to the game. But this power of observation, mate, it's not a natural thing for a lot of people.
No.
A lot of people just do what they've always done. They're athletic, they're big, they're 120 kilos, they can run, you know, 11.5 seconds, 100 metres. They just think that's going to get them by.
Yeah.
And a lot of them don't have parents who can tell them. They don't have mentors who talk to them. How important do you think that is that for us developing us, the NRL, people like you?
Yeah, you need people like me. You need Mark O'Mealy's. You need like all the guys that played in that era in the 2000s back in your club. You know, like, because the experience that we've got and we can actually teach, right? I know some players that the best players in the world, they can't teach. Yeah. They can't coach. It just gets stuck in their head. They know what it looks like. They just can't tell you what it looks like or show you what it looks like. Where I'm like that, I'm big, like I can show you exactly what it looks like because I'll run the plays with you. I can still run like that. Run the plays. Like Roy Asatasi's there, Mark O'Mealy's there, Josh Jackson's there. We all played with each other and against each other. You know, so just breaking games down a little bit. Like I do more one-on-one stuff like this. So come here, mate. This is what you need to work on. Mark O'Mealy's great at doing video and everything like breaking them down. So we're just in the video session with like this young kid, like showing you exactly what to do. And then we'll go on the field and show you exactly what to do. These little plays that I know they need to go to the next level. Because I know what a coach looks at and I know what an NRL coach is looking at. Like they don't care about your size. You know what I mean? Like it's great, but if you can't utilize it or get through 10 minutes without being buggered in the middle, which a lot of these kids would happen right now if you chucked them in first grade, because it's like a washing machine, right? In the middle. So if they don't learn all this sort of stuff, I say it's your apprenticeship right now, right? 18, 19, 20, and then you're up in first grade. Hopefully you don't come back. If we give you all the right tools. We can't just give you nothing. Can't just give you your size. I know a lot of 6'5", 120 kilo Polynesian blokes that never got out of Jersey Fleet because they never evolved and they never understood the game and what it takes to get to, not just NRL, New South Wales, Australia, and dominate at every level.
So your role at the Bulldogs, is it for the SG Ball and the Flag Boys?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're up to, Flag now is what, under 21?
Flag's is 21. 21. SG Ball's the old Flag, like 19. Yeah. So it's like eight from your best 18-year-olds to 21. That's the best age.
So you're getting them out of Harold Matz, and they're coming to the SG Ball and Flag. And is also Mark O'Mealy's in that group? So who's in your group?
Roy Asatasi, Mark O'Mealy, Steve Turner, and Josh Jackson. So you got the brains there, right?
Josh only just finished playing football.
Josh just retired 2 years ago. So if you're a young kid, right, and I said this, there's a couple of really good young kids. I said, do you know what you've got in front of you, like in your back pocket for advice nearly whenever you want? You got me, Roy Asatasi, and Mark O'Mealy. Like if you don't have one question for us, then you're the best. You're the best. Why aren't you in first grade?
And has this Gus put this together?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is all part of Gus's development programs. Mm. He probably did the same at Penrith when he was there. We had the same sort of thing when he was with us at the Roosters. So, and we had, he put together great teams. Like, I remember when Sticky was a coach in 2002, we won the grand final. Gus had like a whole heap. Gus was director of coaching or something like that with us as well. But there was a whole heap of people around in Sticky. Like, he had a whole lot of other coaches, assistants. Johnny Cartwright. Ronnie Palmer was there in those days too. Like, how important is it in your club environment? And you will remember Ronnie Palmer from your Origin days at the Roosters. But how important is it to have someone like a Ronnie Palmer in your environment?
So important, because they understand the culture, right? They're trainers, but they're more than a trainer. They're your best mate. They're the middleman between the coach and players. And if you have a good one like that, your whole playing group is happy, because your coach doesn't have to be like, man, on top of you all the time. He relays it to his S&C, then it gets relayed S&C to the players. Means? Sports and conditioning. Science and something like that.
Yeah, so but like performance people.
High performance, right? Yeah. But there's always that one dude, because Ronnie Palmer made that position famous. Everyone wanted to be like that, because he was in Origin teams, Australian teams. He was that motivator. Like, I remember, like, he had been Origin and Australian teams through kangaroo tours. A more positive person?
Never.
And I love Ronnie Palmer. And I think there's still a spot for him in there, but obviously the game has evolved and everyone's really sports science, got all these young gurus in, everything like that. You know, Ronnie's getting a little bit older, but this
73.
It's so important for a young Ronnie Palmer to be at your club. We've got a great guy, Travis Toomer. He's at the Roosters. He's at the Bulldogs now. He's an integral part of our group.
Yeah, Travis is fantastic.
Yeah, and he's
and
one
a
of the
man you're never going to meet.
Yes, and he's great, because he's out. He's got the blue shirt on. He's got the calls from the coach, so he's relaying whatever the coach is feeling. You know, so it's an important role, and he's at training all the time. He's training these guys. He oversees everything, so it's important to have those guys. So they've got everybody in place at the Dogs.
And Travis is the sort of guy too. What's really interesting about that is that he won't ask you to do something he can't do himself.
No, he'll school you too. It
totally will.
Yeah.
Like in terms
he's
of fitness.
An animal, man. Yeah.
Your fitness is ridiculous. Yeah. And by the way, Ronnie, until probably 71,
he'd school you as well.
He could run and lift weights and do row on machine or do his bread and butters.
Yeah.
Which were the worst fucking thing in the
awful
world.
Awful. That one?
and he put you in the fat squad. So I've always wanted to ask someone like you, who, and I don't care where you pick them from, whether it's Origin, Queensland sides, or overseas sides, or club sides. Who is the toughest dude you ever lace up against?
There was a guy when I first come down to the Bulldogs. His name's Gary Carden, right? He's infamous with Bulldogs players, like the guys like Sonny Bill. Yuck, Sonny Bill, Rennie Matua, JT. Anyone who come through that squad in 98, 99, 2000, 2001 and 2, he was that dude. He would train you harder, mentally, physically, and drain you more than anyone in first grade, right? So he would get you. That's why we all come through the grades pretty good, because he got our mind right and our bodies right. So by the time we got to first grade, I was like, well, you got to spread this out of the whole day when you become full-time, instead of getting a three-hour flogging with this bloke, right? But he would train you harder, and he was folks' eyes and ears. Folks would be like, how's Willie going? Needs another 6 games, needs another 6 weeks, or something like that. How's Sonny going? Like, when Sonny was 17, 18, we're like, pick this guy. Needs another year, or like Rennie needs another this, like, because he had us all there for about 4 years, right? Like, all these players over 4 years. So myself, Rennie, Sonny Bill, JT, Brent Sherwin, Corey Hughes, Haslam, Tony Grimaldi. So about out of 17 players, he had 15 come through that squad. The only people that we didn't go through was General Luke Patton, because we bought him from St. George, and Mark O'Mealy, because we bought him from Norse and Manly. Everybody else come through Gary Carden. That was ridiculous. You know, so he was that dude. We always knock around with him now, because he's getting a bit older and his knee's buggered. And he'd always have these war stories all the time, you know. Like, he'd try to break everybody. So if you got through his, you get to first grade and you'll be fine. You need someone like that. You can't be like soft as hell with these younger kids. I know society's changed and everything like that, but this game is still brutal. You need to be cut from that cloth. You need to be cut a little bit different. It ain't your normal sort of sport. You know, so you got to figure it out really good, like really well at that age. And you need a person that the first grade coach trusts with everything. So you have your eyes on there. That's why we're down there, because Ciro and I have a really good relationship. He understands and he trusts us.
And so, and in terms of, you just mentioned Ciro, I don't think you would have played against Ciro. Did you play
against? I did, yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of marking up against somebody, who did you not like to run into? Was it Gordon Tallis? I mean, what
Petro.
Was it?
Petro
Sivanaseva.
Or Tony Carroll.
Tony Carroll.
Someone like that. They just hurt. Like, they, you know, like, and Petro's, you've met, he's the nicest bloke in the world.
Totally.
And, like, you can't get angry at him, and you would never fight him because he's so nice and he would never fight you, but he's like, I don't know, like, he would just, he'd run into a brick wall, like, with,
he was just hard.
With intent, right? Tony Carroll was, because I'm 6'5", Tony Carroll had the perfect technique to get me. Because he'd dip and he'd just throw you, but he'd hit you like a ton of bricks. Him, Gordon Tallis is just more aggressive. He'd just try and take your face off.
Yeah, but, and also, like, provocative too.
And he had that aura, right? Like, when I was coming through, like, Gordon Tallis was my favourite player.
Yeah?
My favourite player. Gordy's my favourite player. When I was coming through, like, as a young kid watching him play for St George, I'm like, I want to be like that. That's why I moved into the back row and wore number 11 because of Gordon. I always tell him that. He goes, no. I said, yes. I said, I tried to get my game. Like, remember Steve Kearney?
Yeah, sure did.
Great back row.
Yeah.
High skill set. And then I looked at Steve Kearney and I looked at Gordon Tallis and said, I want to be in between that with a high skill set but run like a nut.
Were you the same when Kearney was in when couldn't play Origin when Junior was the coach?
Was that 99? No, it was 99 in Origin, yeah.
A bit too early for you?
Yeah, yeah. I was in the grades, but I wasn't I was in Origin.
Sponsoring, I'll never forget that.
Yeah, when Bradley Clough fell off the horse, hey?
Yeah,
was that it?
Bradley
Robbie Kearns.
Yeah, Robbie Kearns. Yeah, you're thinking Steve Kearney. I'm thinking Robbie Kearns. Yeah, Steve Kearney. Different people.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that was 99.
Because I never let Junior forget that because he thought...
Go on horse riding, that's right.
Nothing's going to happen. And fucking me, people that got injured for falling off horses because the horses
He's never
spooked.
Coached again.
and Junior's never forgot about that. So I just want to quickly go back to the podcast, mate, because we're running out of time. But your podcast is called what? Now, what's the name of it for
Levels.
Our audience?
Levels Network, yeah.
Levels Network.
Yep.
Yep, and it comes out twice a week. What?
Twice a week, Monday arvos and Thursday arvos.
And where are you putting out? Spotify?
Everywhere. All at Spotify.
All the usuals?
All the usuals. Apple. All on YouTube. Everything's going well.
And it has been going.
It's good.
Yeah.
Like numbers-wise, I'm not a numbers man, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care. But our producer and everything like that, like this time last year, it's like it's hitting. It's good. I think people relate to it because it's
normal.
It's like getting the news at a pub, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit of swearing, a little bit of this, a little bit of cheek, a little bit provocative.
But I think
you
it's
know,
Willie Mason too.
Yeah, like, but it's whatever I am. Yep. Off camera, it's no real change. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're going to get this 24/7.
And you're off to Vegas?
Yes, and so are you.
Yeah, I'm, and I'll see you there. I'm going to go to LA before I go to Vegas. But
okay.
Well, are you going to do a show over there?
We are, yeah. We're going to do some stuff.
That's good. That's very clever. And what do you think about the Vegas move? So, how do you think it's going to go?
I think there's a 5-year plan, right?
Yeah.
I think the fifth year, I think we're going to put an Origin there. If we're smart.
That'd be awesome.
That would be like, just to give him a little bit of a preview now, first year, the second year, third year, fourth year, you got to really like, then we could be talking. If he can pack that joint out, imagine all the people that would be going to Vegas anyway if we had an Origin in June. Yeah. It's summertime over there. It'd be perfect. If they set it up like that, if the bigger picture is Origin, to showcase that, our best players, you'll fill that out. And then you just like renegotiate your deal after 5 years. Because if you put an Origin there, you know, it'd be ballistic.
Yeah, totally. Because they would never have seen something like that.
Never.
I mean, I'm hoping the games that we're going to put on a bit of a show when we get over there, but it will never be as brutal as Origin is.
No, we need that. We need the Origin there to really... We're never going to break into the American market, right? But just to get them that showcase that once a year if we're going to go over there and we put an Origin there, they'll watch that.
What do you think is about brutal. Rugby league, the character of rugby league that Americans will like?
The hard hitting. Because they hit hard. Right now, it's very methodical how they hit. Just because there's no shoulder charges or anything like that. I'd rather a shoulder charge than getting hit 3 times in one hit. Someone's got the ball, someone's got your hips, someone's got your legs, and then you get a slow death down to the ground.
Yeah.
They are choking you out. Not choking you out, but like squeezing you so hard. So everything, I always tell these young kids, there's about 200-300 battles in a game, right? Me, I get the ball, I'm trying to find my front, you're trying to put me on my back. There's the battle there. You might win, I might win. And then tick for us or tick for you and then accumulates at the end of the game. Whoever wins more of these little battles will win the war, right? The war is the 2 points at the end of the game. So if you have a little battle, if you have that mindset going in all the time to win these little battles all the time, right? Then you'll end up majority of the time you win the war. Especially you'll dominate in the middle, right? If you dominate in the middle, you win the game at any level. From flag all the way to state of origin.
Yeah, because forward, for me...
You win games there.
Forwards win games.
Yeah.
The backs will finish it off.
There's been rarely a time where I've dominated a game we didn't win.
Yeah.
But when the forwards have actually dominated, yeah. If I've been dominated, it's usually the forwards were on the end, other end of the scoreboard.
Yeah.
But if you know you've played well, it'd be rarely that we're sitting there going, "Wow, we got beat." It'd be down to the wire.
What are you hoping? Just quickly flip over to Vegas again. What are you hoping you're going to see from the Roosters and Manly and Brisbane and the Bunnies?
This is round one for these guys.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be intense. Like it ain't no trial. It's not a trial game. No, they're going there for 2 points. Going to be, you know, real laser focused in. They've been over there. I think a couple of teams are there already. I think you'll see some really good football.
There won't be a trial game. Roosters left yesterday.
Yeah, and same as South.
So have you seen the Dom Young run?
He's a man. Oh my God. Maniac. Mate, how big is he?
Oh, he's six. He's nearly.
He's 6'5", 6'6".
Yeah, well, he's 6'7". So
jeez,
he ran in the Gosford game. We timed him. We clocked him. He was chasing someone down from Manly. I don't know. Someone made a break. He chased him down. He was running across the field. He ran at 10 meters per second.
Shit.
Over 40 meters. In fact, he ran so fast he overran the bloke. He ran past the dude.
Hope he's all right.
His neck's okay.
Yeah.
He's going to go to Vegas. He just can't play.
You wouldn't risk that, would you?
No, he's fine though. He's got no.
I thought it was precaution because I was looking at that. I was like, okay,
nothing structural.
Would have done the. Yeah, well, that's good. A good young kid.
Yeah, he's a good young kid, and the game is so good today. It's so rich with great athletes. It's amazing the athleticism that we see today. Like someone who's that big and that tall can run that fast.
Yeah. How can you move like? Look at these young kids now. Even a Fanua Blake, Payne Haas. Payne Haas is a buck 25.
Yeah.
And he, like, the way he moves and the force into, the, like, you run like that. If you're big and strong and you run into some, good luck trying to hit that. You'll break your shoulder trying to hit that. Atino, Fanua Blake, like, Leota, Fisher Harris, Hargraves, Lindsay Collins.
Yeah.
See the size of Lindsay Collins?
He was a winger.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can run. Can you imagine how someone like Luke Keery must be thinking, what he must be thinking? Because
they're not growing. Sammy Walker,
like you're sitting there, and they run at him.
Yeah.
They run at him. Final question. Mate, what do you think about the whole concussion discussion? You know, Jimmy Graham, blah, blah.
I know. I think it's important that they have the data out there, right? And I think that's what they've been doing since 2014. That was the back end of my career. I know the NRL is collecting data because they don't want a lawsuit on their hands, right? So if they keep collecting data, if they tell you, you're off, well, there's a tick. We told you to go off, this. Could be minor, you know, like hardly any head knock. You're still going off. Precautionary. I think with Jimmy Graham, like, I understand all the point of views, right? Just need to be careful. Look after the players. Like we were in that 2000 and no one cared. Nobody cared.
He's awesome.
He's smart. I love what he's doing.
He's on a mission.
I'm all for him. Yeah.
Well, you get blokes like Mark Spud Carroll. Mark.
Mm.
He thinks he doesn't feel too well at the moment. He's had the.
I know.
And what do you think we should NRL should be doing? And clubs, we should be doing it for ex-players.
I know. I'm not sure what you can do. What can you do? Like if Spud's struggling right now, right? What can the NRL do? Like I think they're trying to do stuff. Like you can't fix it. You know what I mean? You got to train your brain. I've got a good relationship with Spud. I'm always big on like trying to really like grow my brain and like neuroplasticity and all that sort of stuff.
So you train your brain.
I'm trying to like do stuff all the time because think for a second, I don't worry about that. Like, I was in that. I was one of those dudes. You know, the head knocks and everything. Like, it's not about, like, the getting knocked out all the time. It's about the trauma. It's about the head moving. You know, many times, you're talking thousands and thousands of collisions over a 15-year career. And it's like, you know, it's got to take its toll somewhere. You know, like, I'm very wary of the fact I get my brain tested every 4 years. You know, like, you do all these little skills and trying to, like, just grow your brain all the time. Use new things, right?
Yeah.
Like, all the time. Try and get out of your comfort zone. So I like doing the podcast. We talk about a lot of things. Like doing a podcast here, just talking back about history and everything like that. I watch a lot of TV. I don't just watch TV to watch bullshit things. I want to get smarter. I want to evolve. I want to grow all the time.
That's really interesting, Willie, because I've had a little bit to do with the concussion stuff because I'm on the concussion committee for the NRL. And, one of the things that's sort of coming up from the scientists that are telling us stuff because we talk to all the scientists, and they're saying one of the worst things and one of the most affected cohort of people from concussion are those people who tend to sit on their own and not be out there.
Yeah.
Because maybe there's someone who suffers from anxiety perhaps or crowd anxiety.
Yeah.
It's whether you've just had a concussion or you had a concussion 30 years ago and you're now a retired player. You've got to get out into the community and talk to people. And as you say, exercise, learn things, and make yourself do things.
Yeah.
And I worry, and I think maybe the NRL could actually come up with a program for this. Yeah. Like, how do we, you know, get older players? They don't have to have played Origin. We don't have to have them in an Origin situation. Just have them somewhere. Clubs can do the same thing. Yeah. The Bulldogs can do it. We do it. The Roosters. How do we get old players together again?
Yeah. And I think it's up to the clubs, right? I think they really need to go out of their way. The Bulldogs are doing that at the moment, trying to get all the ex-players in. And I always have really good open conversations with, like, you know, Willie Tonga and Sonny and Rennie, all these guys, like, how, like, just say a lot of ailments come after, like, after playing, because you're used to being in a tribe, right? Our ancestors and everything, like, if you leave the tribe thousands and thousands of years ago, you fucking die.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got to be connected to people all the time, right? Like, whether it be a family, whether it be your friends, old work groups, everybody, especially males, want to be part of a tribe, a community. So it's important when you do leave, when you do retire from football, you don't leave it completely, right? It's still a massive part of your life. I know it's consuming, but you need to get back in. Like, a lot of guys who just, like, they sit and they get bitter in the game and all that kind of stuff, don't do that. Just get back into the game. The game still loves you. The club still loves you, right? You're just sitting on the outside. You just got to get back into the fold, in the community. If you're suffering from those, like the depression and anxiety and all this sort of stuff that's really coming on now. So you really got to get back into the club, or even, like, it doesn't have to be your old NRL club, just a football club.
Yeah.
Right? Start doing stuff.
It could be local,
just
local
be
club.
Local. Game. Just get down there and just, like, be a part of a community again. I don't care. It doesn't have to be the rugby league community. Yeah. A lot of players are ex-players and they've got HIAs and they've gone out of the game like that, medically retired. Filthy on the game.
Yeah.
You would be. And you would be. You have every right. But, like, just join a community.
But that doesn't help.
No, it doesn't. It makes you old and bitter all the time.
You've got to get back on the horse and do something.
Yeah.
And I guess that sort of helps us close this off. Because for me, your podcast does exactly that for you.
Yes, it does. Because I'm back in the community. I'm back at the Bulldogs. I'm doing stuff with the younger kids. So it makes me, like, excited every day to go, I'm going to help this kid do that. Right? Yeah. I've got to go to the Bulldogs training this afternoon. I'm going to coach these young kids on some different plays. And I'm like, I'm excited about that. For 2 or 3 days.
Willie Mason, awesome, mate. So good to see you again.
Thank you.